Okay, welcome. I'm sure people will be straggling in, but I think we'll go ahead and get started. Before we get started, let's open with our prayer on page 3 of your companion or Whova app. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Lord, loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to your Son's life and ministry and to answer the call to be his disciples. May our response be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities, and may our stewardship flow from a profound sense of gratitude for your many blessings. By the gift of the Holy Spirit, empower and inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask that in his name, Lord and forever. Amen. Okay, thank you. So my name is Margaret Cately. I'm moderating the session. So if y'all get unruly, you got to answer to me. I do want to introduce our speaker. She's got one of the best bios I've ever seen. And here's my son. It's after school and he's asked me what he can do this afternoon. So not my problem. So Mary Foley, is with Christian Brothers Services and its Mission Advancement and Catholic Schools Management Divisions. And she has over 40 years of experience, as well as many other things. And the best thing about her bio is that she thinks bios are boring and hopes I don't read the whole thing. So I will honor her wishes and let her get started. But I urge you to read it.
And really wonderful to see people after the lunch break, because I know that that can be a tough time. So we will try to keep this as lively as we possibly can. And toward that end, I'm pretty sure you don't want to just hear me talking and talking and talking. So please ask questions, share, tell us about examples you've seen so that we can all learn from one another. I have had the great honor of presenting here at the International Catholic Stewardship Conference, well, from before the time it was the International Catholic Stewardship Conference, when it was the National Catholic Stewardship Conference. And it has been a tremendous, tremendous impact in my life. And one year when we were down in New Orleans, many, many years ago, it was before the time we were in New Orleans when we all had to evacuate, I went to a session that was absolutely life-changing for me. It really opened my eyes to stewardship in a whole new way. And I feel like I have been ever blessed since. So I'm so grateful to all the people sort of behind the scenes who make ICSC happen, like Margaret and her colleagues and our fabulous volunteers. So thank you all for contributing to this. I hope that, you know, 1,000 years from now, we're still having ICSC conferences. She mentioned, I'm from Christian Brothers Services. Some of you may be familiar with us. We might provide health insurance for your employees. You could be in our retirement plan. Maybe we insure your properties. We also have these other consulting services. And the whole point of Christian Brothers Services, if you were to run into our CEO, he would say, nobody finds this inherently interesting. We do this so you can focus on mission. And so you can read more. You can go to our website. As Margaret mentioned, I work in two areas, mission advancement, Catholic school management. All these slides are on the Whova app. Read them at your leisure or don't. It's entirely up to you. But I do want to mention one thing, and that is that Christian Brothers Services itself is a not-for-profit organization. So a lot of our resources are free. And I don't know how you all feel about free, if you prefer to just pay a lot of money. But I married a man whose personal life philosophy is, if it's free, it's for me. And I think he might reflect many of the organizations we work with. So please take full advantage of that. Okay, I will ask you now a question, and you will all respond with enthusiasm. Who is a Christian steward? Okay, good answer. If I were referring to the pastoral letter on stewardship, what might this answer be? Oh. No, but I like your enthusiasm. So this is interesting because, as I indicated, I've been around this for a long time. So a pastoral letter was written about stewardship a long time ago. I 20 years ago. But I'm going to save you all a whole lot of time. Well, it's a great read. Here's the one thing that you want to remember about it. It's the answer to this question, who is the Christian steward? And this is the answer. One who receives God's gifts gratefully, cherishes and tends them in a responsible and accountable manner, shares them in justice and love with others, and returns them with increase to the Lord. Right there. So, did I get it all right? This is, I think, something that could be completely life-changing for people who get exposed to it. Just imagine if everyone was on this bandwagon. If everyone was always thinking in this way. You know what we wouldn't be talking about? How to increase the offertory appeal. When we need to do a special campaign. How we can increase the annual fundraising event. So it is with this in mind that we really want to tackle our topic today about practical tips for stewarding your donors, to really do it in this spirit of not just best practice for donor relations, but also in the spirit of stewardship, to really bring them into that understanding and that commitment. So some years ago, I was asked to do like an evaluation of stewardship throughout a diocese. And I did the research, and then I was going to be presenting it, and I was making up all my slides. And it wasn't until I was proofreading them, and this is the importance of proofreading, when I realized that one of my slides said this. Now, I was going for creating a culture of stewardship. But when I looked at it, it kind of gave me pause. It's like, well, what do we know about cults? We know that people mindlessly follow. And it was like, well, I don't know. If we get people mindlessly following the who is a Christian steward definition, that might not be the worst thing in the world. But probably not mission aligned the way we'd like it to be. So creating a culture of stewardship is what we're going for. And when we talk about best practices and practical tips, what we really, what's very, very clear is that the things that make your solicitation efforts more effective will also make stewarding your donors more effective. And I think it's interesting that sometimes we don't see those connections. It's like, we're segmenting and personalizing all over the place in our direct mail, in our major gift program. And as we should, because segmentation, so dividing your constituents into smaller and smaller categories with like characteristics, and then personalizing it, I'm sure at this day and age, with technology such as it is, nobody's sending out a dear friend letter anymore. Those are the two things that will most greatly enhance your rate of participation and the size of your average gift. So very, very powerful dimensions to your fundraising efforts. But it's also true for your management of your donors, for stewarding them. So the more we, the thing is, you've got donors, like, okay, we've got this big, great big pot of donors. Let us please pray that we all have a great big pot of donors. But they're all very different. They're different ages. They're in different locations. They give differently. They give for different reasons. So we really want to think, since relationship building is at the heart of everything connected to fundraising and institutional advancement, we've got to focus on who they are, what do we know about them. I firmly believe that any question in life can be answered by saying, who is the audience and what is the objective? I keep trying to teach this to my daughter. She's 18. So it's like, Daddy won't let me do it. And it's like, okay, consider the audience. What is it you're trying to accomplish here? Yelling at him will not work. So the idea, that one of the things we're going to talk about today is, okay, who's our audience with more specificity, but also what are we hoping will be accomplished by stewarding these people well? So, what are you looking to accomplish by stewarding these people well? That was not a rhetorical question. This is where you chime in with gusto. You don't look like you're bored. You don't look like you couldn't find a million other things to do on a beautiful day in New Orleans. So you have some interest in spending some time on this topic. So why? Why is it worth your time? We want them to believe in the mission. Excellent. What else, Father? To drive them to support the mission. To build community, the relationships. Yes, yes, all yes. What else?
To create like a continued legacy of giving, not just to them, but through their children, their grandchildren, their friends.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, you don't want one gift, right? I mean, show of hands. You know, we just want one gift and then never another gift again. Okay, so we want to repeat it and, you know, build that culture and have it become even possibly generational. Nice, I like that. Okay, other reasons, other objectives for your donor stewardship program? Okay, let's see. Okay, first of all, I just think it's good manners. And as I get older, good manners are really, really, really important to me. But, I mean, if you think about it, the whole idea of a spirit of Thanksgiving is sort of essential to who we are and what we do. I mean, you know, now, there are a lot of young people in this audience, but do any of you remember a song, Now Thank We All Our God? How does it go? Good. We all are God. With hearts and hands and voices, who wonder? Okay, well done. I mean, that was like the background music of my childhood. I don't know about yours. And then how about All That I Am? All that I am, all, yeah. Okay, thank you. Thank you all for reminding me to renew my ARP membership. Okay, like all good, I mean, we've got a gazillion great songs and prayers, and it's all around this whole idea of Thanksgiving. So that's what, you know, that's who we are. So it makes sense that we would want to be treating our donors in this wonderful fashion. We talked about this, the repeating the gift, but also, you know, it costs you a lot less money to keep a donor than to have to renew them. And people who renew, their average gifts increase over time. One of the things that I just love about the donors that give to our schools and churches and dioceses is that they have this natural desire to do better for you. So, you know, back in the day when, oh, asking for a specific amount of money? Oh my gosh. We started talking about that. People were appalled. So we were asking, you know, just give, just give, just give. But the people who were just giving on a regular basis would typically look at their checkbooks and see what they gave last year and want to do a little bit better each year. Culture of stewardship, we talked about that. You all are probably familiar with the beneficent cycle. You know, the more people give, the more likely they are to volunteer. The more they volunteer, the more generously they are going to give. So that's a great reason to do this. Consistent giving is really something we want to be looking at because there's a lot of research that indicates that people who give consistently over time, even small gifts, are really good prospects for bequest gifts. So, you know, sometimes we hear about these stories, you know, oh, here's this woman, she was, you know, she worked as a janitor her whole life, and then she leaves $300,000 to this college or something like that. But if you have people in your database who, you know, they've been giving you $100 from the time when $100 was a lot of money to now, you know, don't be disappointed that they haven't increased it. They are telling you something about the likelihood of being open to a bequest gift to your organization. And, you know, I don't want to say last but not least, but certainly something else is that, you know, the number of not-for-profit organizations in our country has just skyrocketed over the last, you know, 40-some years of mine and some other people's careers here. And so in light of that, there's a lot more competition for your support. What you want is to make your school, your church, your diocese be one of the top charities that people are supporting. That if, you know, a situation is reached where they can't continue to support all of their charities, you will continue to be in that realm. Okay, so many devices. Okay, so gratitude, we know, is a best practice. I was really interested. I was working with a church, and the pastor said in one of our meetings when we were talking about stewardship, he said, you know, gratitude is a skill. People may, you know, I like to think that everyone, that's their default setting. Like they wake up and they just want to be grateful. They, you know, they choose to be, what was the first line? Receive God's gifts gratefully. And he's like, yeah, not so much, Mary, but a nice thought. But he said, you know, this is something that's teachable and people can acquire this skill. So it's like, okay, then let's teach them. You know, just to even be thinking about that, even if just once a day, he said, you know, what am I grateful for? Does anyone remember there was a book called, it might have been called Simple Gratitude or something like that. Anyhow, it was this book, and some woman wrote it, but Oprah talked about it on her show. And one of the things that was referenced was to get yourself a gratitude journal. And Nick would write down 5 things every night before he went to sleep that he was grateful for. And, like, people went insane buying this book and, oh, a nice journal and a fancy-looking pen to go with it and something to hold the pen to go with it. And, you know, we needed all these accoutrements as if saying thank you is, you know, a brand-new idea. And it hasn't been part of our faith tradition for 10 billion years. So, but it is really something, and a lot happens when that changes your mind. So think about, you know, like, what happened today? What blessings came to you today? You woke up. Thank you. Yes. Many people did not. How many fingers am I holding up? How do you know? Because you can see them. I was 45 years old when my husband and I were blessed to adopt a 3-week-old baby. So, and we found out on Saturday that the baby would be there on Monday. We had nothing, not a bottle, not a bib, nothing. So I was a little overwrought, as you can imagine, and I was waking up like every hour to make sure she was, you know, like still breathing, good, 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 good. And one time when, you know, I look, oh, you know, I roll over, it's like, still breathing. It's like, oh, so beautiful. And then all of a sudden it hits me. I have a brother who's blind. It's like, he will never see this beautiful baby. You know, just that. I noticed that you all walked in here. Which means you have legs that work. I mean, you know, so it's like before you even get out of bed, like you've checked off all these things. But if you can instill that in other people, it can really be an extraordinary force for good. So, and not only that, you know, I know you're thinking, yes, yes, Mary, you're just saying all of these things because you want us to get people to give more money and so on and so forth. And yes, that is true. But, there you are, someone from my first session. Why do people give?
Feel good about themselves.
That's right. It makes them feel good about themselves. That's number one reason for giving. So here are some interesting things about gratitude. These are more benefits to the people who give and in whom you cultivate this spirit of stewardship and gratitude. Did you know that gratitude makes you at least 25% happier? Apparently, it also enhances the law of attraction. So if there are any single people in the room, I think if you really get behind this available single people in the room. There's really no downside to it. And I think by stewarding our donors well, showing them this level of appreciation, you're not just cultivating them for a future gift, but you're kind of modeling a good approach for their lives as well. So there are lots of other things. You can see this. All the slides are in the Whova app if you're interested of all the other things. It will also improve your sleep. So, you know, maybe that was really why the Oprah thing was so popular. Like, people wrote down five things they were grateful for, and then they slept like, you know, get a great night's sleep. Okay, so we've identified the many reasons why we want to steward our donors well. So, objective, check. Now let's talk about this audience. So we've got this great pot of donors, but we want to look at them more individually, more in small groups, more in a more segmented fashion. So what are some of the ways we can slice and dice this audience? The first is by their status. Are they current donors? Are they lapsed donors? SIBUNT stands for some years, but unfortunately not this year. LIBUNT is last year, but unfortunately not this year. So what's the recency of their giving? Because that tells you something, and it will affect the way in which you steward them. Another is, you know, of course, what level are we at? What's the size of the universe? Are we looking at everyone who's given? Well, if you only have, you know, 112 people giving, you can probably do that. But if you've got 4,700 donors to your diocesan appeal or your school's annual fund drive, then you're going to have to start by looking at them from the top and then down. Are they members of a donor society? This came up in our last session when we were talking about major gifts. Donor societies, highly effective. That's why we invented them. And, you know, is that a level of importance vis-a-vis why they give or continue to give? How they're giving to you tells you a lot about your donors. You know, are they, you know, are they showing up with a bucket of cash? Are they writing a pledge, a pledge card out for the year? Are they just writing you a check for this particular appeal? Maybe they've donated stock, wildly appreciated stock, so you get all the money and they get the tax benefit. Maybe you have DAF donors, donor-advised funds. Can I just see a show of hands? How many people have something on your website that will educate people about how they can give to you through donor-advised funds? Okay, wait, but put your hands up higher. Everyone whose hand isn't up, please look around the room. These people can help you. you know, more and more we're seeing that. You know, a lot of people think donor-advised funds is a great way to have sort of like your own mini foundation without all that paperwork. And so, but, you know, DAF donors have to be recorded differently, acknowledged differently. There are a lot of things you need to know to do that and to do it well. But, you know, since we know that people give, why? Because it makes them feel good. If we aren't showing them all the possible ways in which they could give, they might not. And then what do we have? People sitting around feeling badly about themselves. And we just hate that as a community. So, okay, so the form of the gift. The timing, and I've got two aspects of that up here. One is, are they giving you money to use immediately, any way you see fit? Or are they specifically restricting it to your endowment? How many people have endowments? Okay, how many, keep your hands up. How many of you think all your donors know you have an endowment? One of the things we always say in fundraising is never ask a yes-no question. Don't ask your donors, do you want to give or not? You want to say, which of these appeals to you most? And endowment could be one of your top five funding priorities, if it indeed is a priority. Now, you know, what's that thing about saving for a rainy day? It's like, well, if it's pouring and you need all the money and you need to use it right now, maybe don't mention that. But you have... you know, how many of you have a connection to a school here? Okay, how many of your schools, keep your hands up, are more than 50 years old? Ooh, 75 years old. Over 100. Over 100? How old is your school?
I think it's 125.
Congratulations! Give this man a round of applause. Okay, so imagine if 125 years ago, someone said, let's set up an endowment and let's put 10% of everything that comes our way into this endowment. 125 years ago until now. Unless you're a real math whiz, I can't figure out how much that is either. But, you know, just imagine. I always think of endowment as sort of like tithing to the future. And in terms of policy recommendations, like if you can do it, put 10% in each year. And then people will say, have you lost your mind, Mary? There's no way on earth we can, you know, we need everything we can raise. It's like, okay, how about half of 1% this year? And next year go to 1. And then to 1.5. And just build up till you reach that 10%. I mean, if we're going to ask others to tithe, you know, what's that famous quote? Of all that thou hast given me, I will give a tenth to thee. And, you know, just in terms of segmenting my office, I'm really counting on you guys with the collars to jump in with the gospel things. Okay, so that's one thing. Are they giving it for now or are they giving it for later? Because there are some donors who love the idea of endowment. It's like, oh, I'm so tired of these Catholic organizations that are like, oh, we just have to get to June 30th. So you want to, you know, you don't want to make anyone feel bad by not having an avenue for them to give. The other is, when are they giving? And is that a practice for them? I'm from Chicago, and we have a big finance community in Chicago. So one of the things a lot of charities there get are gifts in February and March, because that's when they get bonuses. And the smart ones are saying, oh, look at this. End of February, every year, Steve Kastenhol sends us a big gift. We should make sure that we do something really nice in terms of our outreach with him shortly before that time, because then maybe he would make it an even bigger gift. How are they giving? Is it in response to an appeal? Did you invite them to a group solicitation event? Did, you know, were they at, anyone here do auctions to raise money? Yeah. That was pretty genius, wasn't it? It's like, so thanks to a fine woman on the campaign leadership team at a parish where we did a capital campaign, she said, you should meet my friend Steve. And in fact, that was a great thing for me since I ended up marrying him. But in the beginning, I said to him, he was in the finance world, I was like, do you have to go to a lot of these like black tie charity things? And he said, no, in fact, I'm looking for an excuse to buy a tuxedo. I'd like to do more of that. I was like, I am so the girl for you. And after a while, his enthusiasm may have dimmed a bit, but it has been 23 years. But what he said was, you know, this is fascinating, because he's like spending money right and left at these auctions, and I'm like, this is the man for me. But he's like, so this auction, you get people competing to spend the most money for things they don't need. And then they say, I won this at the auction. And they feel victorious. So, yes, that was... But there are some people who love that. They love to win at your auction. So, you know, knowing what impels them to give is also very, very useful. So, you know, if you're from a school, it's like, okay, they're giving to the school in general. We are all going to have 3 to 5 funding priorities with specifics, numbers, cost, features, benefits. Or are they giving it to you for something else? It's like, I'm a former teacher. I really think it's terrible that they don't have enough funds for X. I'm giving you money for that. And if that's an acceptable use within your gift policy, God love them. How do they like to be communicated with In what ways do they like to be communicated? You know, how old are they? What generation are they from? For those of you from schools, you know, we have a lot of sort of eras in schools. You know, this is the era that Sister so-and-so was the president. This is the era where this. So, you know, they kind of, it's like, oh, this is when we had the really, really good-looking skirts, said no Catholic girl ever. and then restrictions. You know, are people putting restrictions on something? Okay, that tells you this matters to them. And so in addition to honoring that, we want to have that as part of our knowledge about them. So, okay, we've talked about our objectives. We've talked about our audience. Everything's about relationship building. So here, this is what we know. So the big question is, well, what do your donors want? What do donors want in general? Where are we going to go with our donor stewardship plans? So I am willing to bet $1,000 to the Catholic organization of your choice if I am not correct in the following statement, which is all of you are charitable individuals. Feel free to out yourself as not being one now. So, you know, you give to different organizations. You know, you might give to your alma mater, you might give to your parish, your diocese, Catholic Charities, you know, there's the whole world of secular charity too. So when they thank you, when they show their appreciation, what do you value most? What's made you, you know, say, oh, that was really cool? A handwritten note. When was the last time you got a handwritten note from anyone? There was an organization I worked with. They had this great group of ladies who came in just to write handwritten notes on behalf. And they all, what was that thing called? The handwriting way we learned to write? Cursive. And the Palmer method. Yes. So my mother's, I was fortunate enough to have the Sisters of Mercy for grade school, high school, and college. My mother said, they practically raised you, but they failed me in penmanship. Okay, a handwritten note. What else? What do you, you know?
Public recognition.
Public recognition. Yeah, for a lot of people, that is very motivating. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. So being acknowledged by someone in leadership at the organization. Absolutely. A phone call. You know, it's funny. So when I was in college, they said there was this thing coming called technology. And as a result, we would all work 20 hours a week. How's that turning out for you all? So we've got all this technology. Now we've got all these different ways of connecting with people, but many of them with lesser and lesser levels of connection. I was in Philadelphia yesterday doing a board retreat for a school board. And on the way to the airport, I said to the driver, I was like, is it going to bother you if I make phone calls while we're here? And he's like, no, go ahead. And so I started, and, you know, I was on the phone until I was getting out. And it's like, boom, 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 boom. And so many people will say, I'm so glad you called. I'm so tired of email. Or, you know, let's just talk on the phone. Do we need another Zoom meeting? So, you know, that personal touch. And, oh, imagine if we took the personal touch and we linked it to someone from leadership. Now you're getting a call from someone who's very, very, very important. Are there any principals or pastors in the room? You're so very, very, very important. Thank you. Okay, when they do donor research, and this a lot of this gets done on a fairly regular basis, in terms of your acknowledgement, this is what most consistently shows up in donor surveys. that they want it to be personalized. They want you to sound enthused. Take a look at your thank you letters. If it sounds like the IRS could have produced them, warm, loving, and enthusiastic are probably not the adjectives that will be used. They want it to be timely. They one of the things that comes up a lot is, I don't want to get a thank you letter so late that I can't remember that I made this gift. Then I think, wait a minute. You know, is this spam? Is this a phishing trick? That you are using it for what you said and that it's working. You were saying, you know, wouldn't it be great to see what's happened as a result of your gift? And the more you can link it to your beneficiaries, so those of you in school, you know, you have little boys and girls, you know, to the people who benefit, and make it appealing to them. Does anyone else besides me find this completely adorable? Okay, so I got this as an email from an organization that said everything that made me want to give in one sentence. We think that kids should be carefree and cancer-free. Who is going to argue that? Adorable child, Bubbles. So, you know, sometimes none of you here, but other organizations that are not part of ICSE, well, you know, it's like we do an appeal, we send out our thank you letters in 24 to 48 hours, because we know that's a rule, and then we never think about these people again for the rest of, until we solicit them the following year. Well, one and done is going to surely turn people off. We like to thank and thank and thank until we ask again. Or, as we like to say, we like to thank and thank and thank until we offer them another opportunity to feel good about themselves by investing their resources in the kingdom of God. Okay. So, we've talked about some of these things. Let's talk about the rest of them. We talked about notes, calls, emails. How many of you do an honor roll of donors? Oh, okay, an honor roll of donors, where you just list all of your donors so people can see their names. Didn't you just say that people like to see their names? Mm-hmm. And do you guys know about the honor roll of donor draft? So this is actually a solicitation idea. You send out your draft of the honor roll of donors to everyone who has given or not given and say, you know, your name appears, or your name is not yes on this. We're sending it to you donors because we want you to make sure it appears the right way. You know, yes, you're Mary and Steve Castenholz, but who knew you wanted to be called Muffy and Biff? And then for the non-donors, it's like, fear not. It's not too late. You too can be on this list. I'm not going to do a dramatic recitation of everything on here. But, you know, maybe you have a great story. Someone came up with this wonderful idea. I was privileged to be in a conversation where we were talking about people planning their will. And it's like, well, you know what we came up with is we've got six kids. So we were thinking, divide everything up six ways. But the math is really hard. So we decided, let's divide it up 10 ways and pick four charities. Like, that is very, very cool. That would be a really interesting article in the Diocesan Magazine or the alumni newsletter or whatever it is. It's newsworthy, it's interesting, and oh, hey, there's a great idea. For those of you that have the capacity to do e-blasts to your donors, and if you don't, I would really encourage you to get there. Very, very short with a short video. People love that. It's not a commitment. It's just, it would be a great way to do what you were talking about. You know, like, you help make this possible. Click here for a 30-second video. Tell them ahead of time. Otherwise, you know, it's like, don't say, thank you so much. Watch this hour and 37-minute program to know how grateful we are. Can I see a show of hands, all of you who have some kind of events going on at your schools or parishes at some point in time? Yes, all of you have events going on. Of course you do. So, you know, let's not reinvent the wheel. We don't have to create new events. You know, if you have a great school play, have a cocktail party beforehand. If you have a tremendous Christmas concert, you know, people travel from far and wide in December to hear the Alleluia Chorus at your parish. Well, then let's do something with that. One parish, this was my favorite, cocktails before and dessert afterwards. Do you have a donor protocol? Like, this is what happens when a gift comes in. Actually, I'm sure you do. So let me just say, what happens when a gift comes in to your organization, to your school, ma'am? So a check shows up for $500. Okay, so you record it, you send a thank you note. Okay, now let's say it's $10,000. What's your protocol when you get a gift for $10,000? Jump up and down. Yes, I think it's important to celebrate these moments. Call the donor. Okay. The relationship. Right. Right. So if you have funding priorities established that, you know, you go with the top funding priority if they haven't made restrictions. But it is a great conversation to have. It's like, we're so grateful. Donna, thank you. This means the world to us. You know, tell me, what inspired this level of generosity? And then she says, when I was in school, I had Mrs. And it gives you more information for the next time. So if you don't have a donor protocol that goes beyond, you know, meeting the requirements of the IRS, you might want to think about that and use some of these things so that you know, it will be true that you thank and thank and thank until you ask again. And then the last thing is, do y'all know what the highlighter test is? This is for both your solicitation materials and your acknowledgments. So you want to highlight the references to, let's take a direct mail letter, a solicitation. How many times do you refer to the donor? How many times do you refer to your organization? It ought to be 2-1 in favor of the donor. And if we're doing that for the solicitation, you can imagine how even more important it is for the acknowledgments, because that's really all about the donor. So use the highlighter test to help you with that. Yes, sir.
When we call new donors, one of the things we always ask is there something special you'd like us to pray for you?
Thank you. Yes. Always. That's the beauty of calling. Although you can also do it in the printed word, you know, thank you so much, blah, blah, blah. On such and such a day, we'll be having a mass in celebration of this, that, or the other thing, feast day. You know, if you would like, you know, please send back your prayer requests. Or, you know, we have a prayer circle. What can, you know, how can we be praying for you? You know, it, I mean, it really drives home who we are and whose we are. Okay. One of the keys to good donor stewardship is that it's intermittent acknowledgement. It's not just one and done. And, you know, it isn't like, oh, yes, it's the first of the quarter, and this is when I get my, you know, every quarter letter. You know, you want it to happen in different ways. If you download the slides and you click on this link, this is, it's about Southwest Airlines, about whom I have little or no opinion, other than they get people from one place to another. But if you look at this, you would feel like, oh, what they put in, you know, the way they see what they do. It's just, it was just amazing to me. Someone in a program like this brought it up and said, you should see this. And I would encourage you to think about that, because if that's how they're kind of spreading their message, imagine, given what our message is, the good news, how we could be doing it, since we've got so much more to work with. How are we doing on time?
15 minutes.
Okay. All right. Storytelling, you know, we always hear about this. There's a gentleman, he was the director of stewardship and development at the Archdiocese of Chicago for a very, very long time. His name is Ray Coghlan. Some of you may know him. But he used to joke, you know, at the end of the day, all we're doing is telling a good story and passing the hat. So do we have good stories? One of the benefits those of you who are here from schools have is you've got a million stories. You know, every child is a story. You know, here's the student who came from this kind of a family. Here's the student who was having struggles in this regard. When my daughter went to school, there was a telephone. This was before we had to get all high up in security and all that. But the kindergarten had a telephone in it. And the kindergarten teacher, who had been there for a quarter century, she would always tell parents, parent-teacher conferences and other things, listen, if there's anything I can do, especially if there's anything I can do in, you know, while your child's in school, I don't care if he's not in my classroom or anything like that. So one day, some dad finds out he needs to go on a business trip, and he needs to leave now, and he is not going to get to see his kid before he leaves. And he knows that this will be quite upsetting to this particular kid. And he doesn't know what to do. But he remembers that Mrs. Mammalella said, if there's anything I can do. So he calls her, and he's like, this is the situation. I don't know what to do. There's nothing to be done. And she goes, I'll go get him. Goes down the hall, takes the kid out of class, brings him back. They get to have a conversation, and everyone feels much better as a result. It's like those kinds of things, that dad and that kid will remember that for the rest of their lives. Stories like that, we've got millions of them. We just need to think about what they are and how we are going to tell them. Has anyone, you know, you mentioned earlier what you value. Have you seen anything like, wow, that would be really cool. I don't know if we can do it, but, you know, that would be a really cool thing to do. Something sort of along the lines of what you said, sir. I received something, I can't remember who sent it. And it wasn't about, like, send in your prayer intentions, or is there something we can pray for? They were saying, thank you so much for your suggestion. Would you like to become a prayer partner for a child in our school? Here's what's involved with that. It's like, basically, we give you a first name and a grade. And all we ask you to do is pray every day for him. But that child and his parents are going to know that there is someone, only a first name, who is praying every single day. You know, in addition to working in the fundraising arena with schools, I also do a lot with enrollment and student recruitment and marketing and all that. And we're always talking about, what are our special and distinctive characteristics? You know, if you said, every single child in our school has a prayer partner who prays for them every single day, I cannot even imagine what the public school comeback to that could possibly be. So be on the lookout. You know, it's like, oh, here's another, you know, I'm sure you all get lots of thank you letters and things like that. But now look at them with a more critical eye. It's like, ooh, how would this work? What could we do? What could we do that would be better than this? Another great way of stewarding your donors is to engage them. Like, hey, can we meet? We're not going to ask you for a gift. We just want to talk about, like, what inspired your generosity? How are you connected to the school? What do you value most about our school? And you can do that through individual meetings, focus groups, surveys. People love being asked for their advice. A great opportunity is anytime you have someone, oh, you're new, aren't you, in your role? Oh, Mrs. Jones, you know, I want to thank you, first of all the generosity you've shown over the years. You know, I'm brand new, and I'd just love to come and visit with you and hear a little bit about how you feel like things are going and how I could make them better. And you know, you only get one bite of that first-year apple. So start that tomorrow. It used to be that we could do a lot with, you know, let's have an appreciation event. We'll have a mass and a brunch. And I'm sure that all the clergy members that are in this room give knockout homilies that people cannot wait to get to. So thank you very much. But in the event you are not so blessed, you know, people, you know, it's like if the response to an invitation to something is like, oh, not another one of those, then rethink it. Do something differently. I was with a school. They did a special appeal for new science equipment. It's like, so we're going to have a donor event, and, you know, like, we'll cut a ribbon. It's like, okay, you know, they'd get to see it. It's like, can't we do something? So what they did was they got one of these creative types, what they call mixologists. It was like the science of cocktails. And he had things smoking, and, you know, it was really cool and really different. You know, you don't have something like that every day. But it's also like, okay, we've got some big event coming up. What am I going to do during that event to make these people feel particularly appreciated? I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on moves management. Some of you may already be doing it. If not, I would absolutely encourage you to think about this as a way to really be better stewarding your donors. But if you want to talk more about it, I'm happy to do so in the Q&A. So let me just wrap up with this. I know there are a million ideas for how you could steward your donors well. But at the end of the day, you know, how many of you have a staff of 15 working on your development effort? Right. So, you know, there's, you know, what can you deal with? You know, you all get the same 24 hours, and so do all the members of your staff. So, but maybe we just take the top donors. Maybe we start with 10, and then we expand the program and see. You know, take your time and then build it out. And along the way, it's like, wow, you know, we had that incredibly creative idea. Nobody liked it. Okay, we've learned something now when we expand to a bigger group. And also, don't feel like it all has to fall on you. You know, when we're asking volunteers to solicit, so come to training, choose your prospects, and we're going to tell you how much to ask each one for. We want you to go out and come back with, you know, take 10 names, come back with 10 pledge cards or 10 checks. When I ask someone to do that, what do you think the response is for the people who say, yes, I'd love to, Mary. Where have you been all my life? Okay. Some people, surprisingly enough, even though I don't frame it as a yes, no question, will say no. In fact, some would rather stick needles in their eyes. But, you know, the first no is never. You know, they say most people give after the second time they say no. So then I say, oh, I totally understand. We want you to do something comfortable. But you know what? We could really use help with calling the donors and thanking them. Could we sign you up to make, say, 10 calls a month? We'll give you a script, names, phone numbers. You won't know the amounts. You'll just be a representative of the board, the faculty, the this, the that. How do you feel about that idea? There's my get-out-of-jail-free card. I don't have to ask for money, but I'm not telling her no because it seems like she will not go away. So, you know, you can get other people involved. Some school boards, the first 10 minutes of every meeting, you come in, you sit down, you've got your cell phone, here are the people you're calling and thanking. You know, and again, it's not just thanking them, but you make 10 thank you calls a day. Boy, you're going to be a lot more thankful in general. I would also say, please talk with one another. You know, within a diocese, like get all the school people together and say, what are you guys doing? What are you guys doing? The Archdiocese of Chicago had a group like that for over 40 years. You know, it started out when development at the high school level was in its infancy.
And it was like, I don't know much. What do you know? Okay, there are five of us who do this. Let's get together and teach each other what we know. You know, share your resources. Okay, that's a lot of me talking. How about you? Questions, comments, suggestions, good jokes? Yes, ma'am.
Tell me more about the honor roll. That's not something we're currently doing. Where have you seen the list printed?
So it used to be we always printed it and mailed it, and it cost a whole boatload of money. Now, typically, what organizations who print a donor honor roll of donors will do is they will mail it with a personal handwritten note to their upper-level donors. But then for everyone else, it's just an email or a postcard that says, hey, it's on the website. Go to this link. And then that saves you a ton of money for the people who were never going to read it anyhow. Yes, ma'am. So how would you like my answer to come out? The first thing is you should find out whether or not this is an actual thing that could happen. It really depends on how the charter for the endowment is written. But most of them do have clauses where you can invade the principal to do something. So where we see it most commonly is like we're doing a big capital project. If we wait till we have all this money in hand, it's going to cost so much more. So we'll take this out, but we plan to repay the coffers of the endowment with the pledges that will come in. As the second part of your question, I think, is let's just get moving and show something, and that will inspire future giving. At which point, I think it would be very important then, if he's saying it has to stay in, you're saying I'd like it to come out, to just a hunch, I could be wrong, is to say then we really do need this policy that says, you know, X percent is going in, and we need to make sure that when we put together our list of top funding priorities, the endowment is always one of them, so that those people who are inclined will give. And, you know, some schools will do a separate endowment or a separate, you know, there's a high school in Chicago that they really got on the endowment bandwagon before it was hip, and they do a big event every year, and all the proceeds go straight to their endowment. Well, you know, when the cost of Catholic education, you know, suddenly started creeping up and up and up, that endowment has saved them, but they've never spent a penny of the principal. Yes, ma'am. Wow, what a mystery. Yes, small praying children in plaid saying thank you with their good manners. This is fantastic. And you know what? That costs you no money. Yes, remind them of who it's all about. You know, this has all been about strategies and tactics and, you know, best practices. It's like at the end of the day, if you're fundraising for a school, you know, it's about the kids. Remember that. Use them. Employ them. And it's a good way to educate them about stewardship and philanthropy.
Maybe one more?
Okay, right, then well, can I?
Yeah.
There was something on here, and I just don't want you guys to think that I am losing my mind.
Using different voices, we talked about other people who can be doing it. Actually says bugs. So at one point, we had a panel of foundation funders come in and talk to all the schools of their archdiocese in Chicago, and there was a woman who was newly appointed to a certain foundation, and she said the guy who made all the money for the foundation would come in and say, send this school $10,000. And when she started the job, she'd say, yes, sir. And then the next time, she'd say, yes, sir. And the next time, She said, okay. And the fourth time she said, wait. She said, you are about to become the single largest donor to this Catholic school and you are Jewish. Please just help me understand this. Well, what was happening was that in addition to the, you know, IRS assumed thank you note, a student wrote a thank you note to this fellow. Dear Mr. Smith, how are you? I am fine. My name is Tim. I hope you are having a good day. Thank you for helping our school. Here is a bug I squashed for you. And then he'd get this letter and he'd come in and say, send them $10,000. So I just like to say that while I am not a fan of the insect world, you never know when it could play a part in stewarding your donors. So thank you all very much. It's great to be with you. Please take advantage of free resources. Best wishes for a great conference as you go forward.